Hi everyone, this is Iris, also known as Eyes of Iris on YWP. Welcome to the special Anthology 12 edition of Line Break. I'm so excited to be sharing these interviews with the writers, artists, and photographers who are included in this year's Anthology 12. Thank you to Lauren, Vivian, Roxanne, Charlotte, Siri, and Eden Ann for talking with me. You are all so incredible. Before we get started, here are some quick messages from Young Writers Project. YWP wants to thank all of its donors for their support, especially the George W. Merkins Foundation for making the publication of Anthology 12 possible. Big thank you! The editorial and production team for Anthology 12 is Susan Reed, William Anderson, Kathy Foley, Andrea Gray, Alan Schillhammer, and Queen City Printers. All writers, photographers, and artists who are published in the anthology will receive a copy. If you would like to purchase the book, please click on the Anthology tab on the YWP site for more details. Congratulations to everyone featured in Anthology 12. I hope you all enjoy this episode. Here is Eden Ian, who I spoke to about her poem Introverted, found on page 32 of Anthology 12.
Hi, I'm Eden Ian. My username is Kitty Cat Ruff, and this is my poem Introverted. Give me daffodils of summer yellow, and swain irises rich purple color. Your irises spin, and I don't know why, but I made you stand and watch the sky turn dappled gray to black and blue. What would I never do for you? I tried to say hello today, but I was blinded by the sun. They say the sun's still spinning, spinning, spiraling out of control. I tried to speak, and speak I did, but I don't think they heard at all. Hello, hello, do I exist? I didn't think it'd come to this. Sometimes I want to be alone in my introverted biodome. But sometimes, when I'm on my phone, I'm secretly trying to find my cowardly courage, waiting to talk to anyone.
Oh, thank you so much. What was your inspiration for this?
Well, I moved about a year ago. It's always hard to make new friends after a move, but with the pandemic, everyone's face was hidden behind a mask, and it was just harder than normal, I felt, trying to meet new people, and I'm a little on the quiet side, so made it especially difficult.
When I was younger, we moved from Florida to Vermont, which was a big change. I came, like, in the winter, so the school year had started, like, dance classes had started, everyone had already made their friends, and I was just kind of stepping in, like, hey, can I jump in? And so that was really difficult, but I can't imagine how more difficult it would be like with the pandemic and being told, like, don't make friends, don't try to hang out with people, like, be on your own for now.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy, but there were also some pretty good moments too once I started talking to people. So I think, yeah, this is definitely just about everything that was running through my mind, you know, like, oh, I was anxious, are people going to want to talk to me? You know, so I'd be on my phone in my introverted biodome.
Yeah, like the line in your piece about, they say the sun's still spinning, spinning, spiraling out of control. I feel like that kind of definitely relates to that feeling of like, your like anxiety or worry, like spiraling into like, what are they going to think about me? What do they think about me when they look at me? How do I look at them? And like, how are we going to be friends? And are we even going to be friends? And like, it's a lot to think about. And it definitely feels like a spiral. So I love so many lines in this poem and all of the colors in the first stanza, like a paint palette sort of. It's an interesting visual between contrast between like the summer sweet yellow daffodils and the black and blue sky, like an incoming storm sort of.
That's one of my favorite parts of the whole poem. There's a little story there. I used to live in New Hampshire and we'd always have daffodils and irises in our front yard, and I really miss those here. I live in the south now, but there are a lot of storms here, a lot of storms. It rains a ton, so it was kind of like the actual flowers to storms, and also definitely like the emotional storm.
Another line that I thought was really interesting, two of them. Hello, hello, do I exist? I didn't think it'd come to this. This one reminds me of a song lyric, like it could be from an early 2000s punk song or like even Olivia Rodrigo or something. What was your inspiration for this part?
Just being stuck in my own head. That's also another thing running throughout this poem. Just We talked about anxiety a little bit, but oftentimes, you know, you kind of get lost in those thoughts. And so then I just have, I imagine all these like conversations in my head.
It's an interesting metaphor, like getting stuck in your head and wondering, like, do I exist beyond these thoughts? And like, how can I kind of get away from these? And it goes into the next line that you have too. Sometimes I want to be alone in my introverted biodome, which I think is really cool. What was kind of your inspiration for that line or that idea of like an introverted, like entire environment? It like made me picture like a snow globe and just one person alone in it.
I think part of this, which I also tried to reflect in the title with the question mark at the end, with being, I don't want to get too like broad lens or like philosophical here, but with being a teenager, you know, people often say, oh, you're trying to find yourself, you're trying to figure out who you are, you're this type of person, you're that type of person. Especially when you're in a new place, you want to really find a group of people. A lot of times people think of introverts and they always want to be alone, they're just super artistic, and they're always, you know, they'd rather be just sitting down somewhere writing a poem or painting or something like that away from everyone else. But that's not always me. Sometimes I like doing that. Sometimes I do just want to find a quiet spot on campus and let my pen do whatever it wants to do. But not always.
Yeah, I feel the same way because I always thought that like I was an introvert, and like if you're a writer or a creative person, you have to be an introvert. But then once I started at college, I feel like I definitely became an extrovert. Once I was like kind of thrown into social circles, like continuously, I was like, okay, I just gotta become an extrovert. And now I do enjoy being with other people, but I do really enjoy being my bookworm introvert. That's definitely still part of me, even though I am, you know, doing all these extroverty things. You're ending. But sometimes when I'm on my phone, I'm secretly trying to find my cowardly courage, waiting to talk to anyone. I totally understand that like duality of being an introvert and wanting to be alone with yourself and then wanting to talk to others and waiting for them to reach out and being like, oh, well, someone's going to want to talk to me, so I'll just have to talk to them.
Yeah, you pretty much hit it on the head. I think you said that you started college, right? Yeah, you had to talk to more people. That's the same thing. Even though I do like having some space to myself and writing poetry, I mean, I want to have friends, so I have to go and talk to people.
So how did you first become interested in writing?
Good English teachers. When I was really little, I loved Taylor Swift for as long as I can remember, and I think some of her lyrics can get really poetic. And especially living in New Hampshire, you have like the nature and it just makes you want to write, like Robert Frost, all that stuff. I would just write little songs and little poems for myself. And then I think around sixth grade, my English teacher was talking to us about poetry and he told us about YWP, and I wasn't old enough to submit stuff myself. So he submitted some pieces for me, and thankfully it's such a supportive community. You know, people commented on it and they said like keep writing, but they gave me like constructive criticism. So ever since then I've been really lucky to keep writing with YWP.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you moved from New England to the South. How have you kind of stayed connected with YWP despite that like big distance?
I don't know, I mean, I keep uploading to the website. I really like just looking through the other people's recently uploaded work. I love your podcasts. I listen to some of those. Like, it was something that was always there for me once I moved. Like, so much was changing, but always had YWP. So that was definitely important to me.
Oh, that's so sweet. I'm so glad that you like Linebreak and that YWP has been that, like, constant in your life. How do you want to continue writing in the future?
I definitely like challenging myself with new styles. I think I can also grow a lot just by researching and reading the works of different poets. I mean, there's a lot of poets out there that even if their work isn't super well known, I think it's, you can still learn a lot. Reading the work of a lot of different people, maybe not even in poetry.
I agree. I mean, everyone always says that reading is the best way to become a better writer, or just like a writer, period. It's like reading is a masterclass in writing. There's so much that you can learn about style and tone and characters and plot and in poetry, line breaks, of course, and like all these other cool things. So I think that reading really is the best way to learn about writing and to like develop your style and kind of take what you think is cool or weird from other authors and kind of choose what you want to have in your own writing or what you don't want to have.
I think also with humor, I've always been someone who's super afraid of trying to write comedy. Yeah, I've just been reading more works in the comedic genre, and I've tried out writing it myself. And so it does feel good when I have, a friend or family member read it and they smile or they laugh at something. Yeah, I think it's good to get out of your comfort zone once in a while.
Definitely. It's just cool to see what you can come up with and what like interests you. Well, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about your poem. Congratulations on being published in YWP's Anthology 12.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me to talk on a podcast. It was really cool.
That was Eden Ann with her poem Introverted. Here is Roxanne, who I spoke to about her poem My Side of the Lake, found on page 8 of Anthology 12.
Hi, I'm Roxanne. My username is Roxy for the win, and this is my poem, My Side of the Lake. What's the weather on your side of the lake? Over here, it's been raining for days. Tell me, how high does the grass grow over there? And how often do the fireflies play? Over here, we've got mothballs and curtains and chairs and a broken old piano and a ticket from a fair. Over here, we've got tin cans and old hats and warm sweaters. Over here, we have fun, no matter the weather. Over here, we've got gray skies and a fireplace and a book. Over there, you've got a motorboat, a countertop, a breakfast nook. Over there, you've got a 30-inch flat screen TV. Over here, we've got marshmallows and everything to see. So I say, keep your steel and your granite and your hedge funds and law firms. Keep your tennis skirts and fake candles and apples without worms. Keep your not brown grass and your cocktails and mason jars. Over here, we've got bedtime and walnuts and stars.
Thank you so much. What was your inspiration for this?
Well, I was like sitting in my creative writing class and I was thinking about a children's book that my mom used to read to me called I Love You the Purplest. And it was about this, like, it was about basically about sibling rivalry, but it had these beautiful watercolor illustrations of like people at like a summer house. And I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about like growing up in suburbia and feeling different and feeling like a different kind of person than the people around me. And it's sort of one thing led to another.
I think it's really cool how the narrator side of this lake is so messy and it's imperfect and things are probably secondhand and broken, but there's still so much value in it and it's still filled with so much care and compassion.
Yeah, exactly. And I was thinking about like spending summers with my family. Like, we don't really live near the water, but we used to go to Cape Cod and just about hamburgers and watermelon and like swings and about like feeling like imperfect but perfect.
Exactly. I feel like that too. We rarely go on family vacations, so it's always so special when we do. And I feel like it's just so fun and it's like such a carefree vibe, even though like it's not a yacht, but I mean, I don't think I would like that. I don't think it'd be the same like kind of homey feel to me.
Exactly. And like my family, we just often argue, but we always come back together in the end. I think like most families do. And we always end up having a good time. So.
Same with my family. So, summer lines. Over here, we've got mothballs and curtains and chairs and a broken old piano and a ticket from the fair. I love how this has so many images in it and how, you go from these mothballs and the curtains, which is kind of like, is this an abandoned house? Is it kind of like run down? And then you go to the broken old piano and the ticket from the fair, and you're like, oh, it's filled with all these memories and mementos and like really cool things that you want to keep and remember.
Right. And I've always wanted to like work in a museum or be like an archivist or a librarian. And that's like what I want to do with my life. And so I love old things. I love the memories and the stories connected to them. And the ticket from the fair is especially important because growing up and, to this day, ignoring COVID, of course, we would always go to my dad's childhood like county fair, the Brooklyn Fair in Brooklyn, Connecticut. And they had like, rides and carnival games. But they also had like animals, like the 4-H club, and that was like my dad's childhood, and it was a big part of my childhood too, which is like driving down there and going to it. So that was definitely an inspiration for that line. And I definitely like the contrast of the old things that are valuable, not, despite the fact that it might be broken or a little bit musty.
Yeah, there's this big fair in Vermont, the Champlain Valley Fair, that I used to go to all the time in middle school. They haven't had it last summer. They didn't have it. I don't know if they're having it this summer, but a big part of my middle school
years and like going there, and I never went on the rides, but like playing the games and getting all the food and like, you know, it's so cool how this one experience can bring back so many memories that I hadn't even really thought of in so long. And the other thing that you mentioned about books is that I always prefer to buy used books and like secondhand books, because I feel like they're so much better than new books. Like, kind of can come up with these stories for like why they got rid of the book, or like if they lost it, how did they lose it, and like cool things like that. There's so much more story in them.
I love used books. I love bookstores. I love the way books and old books especially smell. Like, that's the best smell in the world. Love old things. I love museums. And that was a big inspiration for this poem, because like I often think about, like, you know, in 100 years people are going to find, you know, the ruins of our civilization and be like, wow, I wonder what those people were thinking, the way that people look at, you know, ancient Egypt and stuff. I just think it's such a cool concept, such a cool idea to think about old things and the meanings behind them. Coming back to the theme of family, you know, I'm really into genealogy and old family stories and old graveyards even. Like, I know it's a little bit morbid, but I love going to old graveyards. Just like imagining those people, imagining what it was like to be those people, because there are some pretty crazy people in my family who were just lived interesting lives, or they were immigrants, or they built a business, or they were just kind of odd, or they were like criminals. The ordinary people of the past make us who we are.
Oh, I love that. That's so sweet. I think genealogy is so cool, especially because I don't know that much about my family.
Right. And my family is Ashkenazi Jewish. So at a certain point, you know, all those records are gone or never existed in the first place, you know, in the old country. You just have to imagine sort of like what these like peasant people in the shtetls were sort of like doing with their lives, and what they would have thought of me, you know, this queer conservative Jewish teenager in 2021. Did they ever imagine what their descendants would be like?
To me, that's like such a cool thing to write about. Anyway, so the ending of your poem, which I really like, what's your inspiration for this ending?
So I grew up in suburbia, like white affluent suburbia, and I always felt a little bit different, and I often felt very left out, very on the outskirts. And through writing, I like to wrangle with that and express that through writing and art. One thing that I want to point out is the cocktails and mason jars. It's like this faux rusticness, this faux familial bliss that doesn't really exist. And not that any family is perfect, especially not my own, but you have the real family love, and then you have this like fake posed family love, like the holiday cards and stuff. And the cocktails and mason jars is my attempt at taking a stab at that.
Yeah. So some other questions. How do you tell stories with your writing, and how do you kind of come up with topics to write about?
Well, I mean, I've been telling stories for a really long time, and I like to just continue that thread throughout my life of always having these stories inside me, having these stories with me. And honestly, inspiration is such a funny, elusive thing, because I'll just be sitting in my writing class or sitting in my room, and I'll be like, oh, I got to write about that. So I don't think that there's, you know, one particular place that stories come from. I think that stories can come from all sorts of things and all sorts of places.
Yeah, I agree. How does your writing class kind of inspire you, and what's that experience been like?
I took creative writing, you know, all throughout last year. I just think that being in a room with other writers and sort of pressures you to do writing that you might otherwise procrastinate, and having like my great English teacher, Abby, shout out to Abby, having people who support you, who will edit for you, who will be like, oh, this doesn't quite work, or this works really well, is super positive. And I just like communities of writers. That's why I love Young Writers Project.
Me too. I think I've said this so many times. It's so important to have a mentor, like someone in your life who just completely encourages and supports your writing. I think that's just so great. And the English teachers that I've had have helped me so much. Honestly, probably the reason why I'm writing now.
Absolutely. And I've had all sorts of mentors in my life. I had a camp counselor who was my counselor for 7 years and just like kept me writing funny things and serious things and poetry under pen names, because I was embarrassed that I like to write poetry, which no one should ever be. Even if it's really, you think it's really bad, someone's going to love it. I think that having, like you said, having a mentor, even if it's like your parent or your friend, is key, and having a community is vital.
I can't imagine not writing and not having like that connection to myself. I go through phases of so many different things, liking different things and different books and different people even, but I always go back to writing, and that's the one thing that I can count on where I don't feel like I have to be someone else, because a lot of times I feel like I've got to be, you know, a real teenager, I've got to be a real adult, I've got to be all these different people to impress others. But with my writing, I'm just myself. And I think that I don't ever want to like let go of that place where I know that I belong.
You put that perfectly, though. I honestly feel exactly the same way, that I can be 100% myself when I write.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And congratulations on being published in Anthology 12.
Thank you so much. This is an immense pleasure. And I'm really excited about the anthology to sort of be a capstone of my first year at Young Writers Project.
That was Roxanne with her poem, My Side of the Lake. Here is Siri with her poem, In the Afterlife, found on page 7 of Anthology 12.
I'm Stargirl, and this is poem In the Afterlife. In the afterlife, we live in a place filled with swirling silk-clothed dancers, light on their feet, around trees dripping with white Christmas lights. We drink green tea while petals from cherry trees blow around us. We all hear the same music, but it never sounds the same twice. In the afterlife, we sleep in open-air houses, white gauzy curtains billowing in the lavender wind, colorful cushions scattered all through the house. We fly kites with long streamer tails against the sunset and drink moonlight from water lilies. In the afterlife, everyone talks in colors, walks cobblestone streets lined with blooming apple trees and clear canals. The rain smells like wild blueberries, and the thunderstorms over the dark evergreen mountains like crushed ginger. In the afterlife, we read old love letters, while white candles burn all around us, and dreams sound like wind chimes. People use sparklers as lights, and everywhere there are blooms of lupins. In the afterlife, we live under paper birch trees with bright ribbons thrown into their branches, and skyscrapers push up all around us. Street vendors sell anything you can imagine, and everywhere people go about their life. But among the crush, the honking cars, the people, the houses, the trees, silk dancers twirl.
Oh, thank you so much. What was your inspiration for this?
Honestly, this was written during the beginning of COVID for me. And so it was, everything was scary and new, and I didn't know what was going on. I was dreaming about going to a place where everything was just okay and you could create whatever you wanted to. And I realized that I often think about ghosts and where they go after they die, well, people after they die. And I realized that nobody knows what the afterlife is like, but maybe we get to create it. And so that's the world I created for myself.
That is such an interesting thought. I love that. The idea of an afterlife is just so interesting to me, because I've read a lot about, you know, like mediums who can communicate with people who have passed on, and like immortality and reincarnation. I've read a lot about those things. So it's all just really interesting to me to see like people's different perspectives on it and how their ideas can be really pleasant and beautiful, and other ideas about the afterlife can be very like much a punishment for people. So I think it's interesting how people have different takes on it.
Yeah, I was thinking about, well, you know, ghosts. And then I was thinking about how we often dream and think about these magical places that we want in this world that we think we can never have. And I don't think we really realize that we're capable of so much more than we actually know. Like the people who can talk to ghosts, like they've realized that a lot of things are possible, but like, I guess people who don't think about that as much, who perhaps have busier lives, it never crosses their minds. So they never realize like, oh, maybe if I think about this place often enough, maybe that's where I'll actually end up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really interesting for sure. So what was the first line that you thought of in this piece, and how did you kind of go from there building ideas?
So I just finished reading my favorite book, I'll Give You the Sun. I finished reading it and I looked up around my room and I have the lighting system is Christmas lights. And so I thought, well, Christmas lights are beautiful everywhere. They add a little bit of beauty to even the darkest places. I thought about a world where they could exist anywhere without the need for electricity or anything. And so I thought, well, if I could have that, then I'd have them thrown up in trees. And then I thought, what would I have on the ground under them? And I decided people dancing, and it sort of just progressed from there.
That's really cool how, you know, it just started with something that you like physically saw and then turned it into like this imagined world that feels like a very real place while still having all these like really whimsical elements. I love so many lines, like you mentioned, the trees dripping with white Christmas lights. We drink green tea while petals from cherry trees blow around us, and white gauzy curtains billowing in the lavender wind. They're like such beautiful images that feel like they could be paintings on their own or something.
Oh, thank you.
And I also loved this whole, these are just little bits and pieces, but we drink moonlight from water lilies. That reminded me of like little fairies, and everyone talks in colors, walks cobblestone streets lined with blooming apple trees and clear canals. The rain smells like wild blueberries, and the thunderstorms over the dark green mountains like crushed ginger. So many details in here. I love them all. How did you kind of put these images together, like very specifically?
For the thunderstorms over the mountains, that one's easy. So the thunderstorms, I've always imagined dark evergreen trees whenever I think of thunderstorms, because I used to live down in Maine and we would get beautiful thunderstorms down there. And my favorite time was when we were eating, my mom makes this amazing peach ginger crisp. And so my favorite memories are from watching the lightning over the evergreen trees while eating that ginger crisp. And so that's just what it made me think of. And then the moonlight and water lilies. This is going to sound really strange, but moonlight always makes me think of pictures, like old photos. And old photos, for some reason, I connect them to nature around me. And water lilies was one of them, my favorite type of flower. And so I thought about how, you know, people are always saying, like, oh, I wonder if there's actually a God up there or many, and what they do besides, like, you know, create this world, and what they, how they exist. And so there must be a way to drink moonlight if they do it.
The interesting thing about like creating something is that it makes sense to you based on your mind, but it might be completely strange to someone else. And that's like the beauty of it, is that you can go into someone's mind like through whatever they create, like poetry or art, or an engineer creating a car or something. I don't know, just like seeing what someone creates and seeing how their mind works. It's like such a cool thing, because I never would have made the connection between moonlight and old pictures, or old pictures and nature. I would have gone from like old pictures to photo album or something, and then photo album to a couch. Like, so it's cool how we have such different perspectives, and how, you know, it's all around the same topic, but it goes off in so many different areas.
Yeah, that is interesting.
So some more lines from your piece. We read old love letters while white candles burn all around us. We lie under paper birch trees with bright ribbons thrown into their branches. But among the crush, the honking cars, the houses, the people, the trees, silk dancers twirl. I feel like this entire piece is just kind of twirling, or like it's a purposeful move, you know, sort of like a dance.
Originally, it wasn't, you know, trees pushing up into the city. Originally, I was imagining a place where there was no climate change or air pollution or anything like that, but I couldn't get it to flow the way that I wanted it to. And so I decided, well, like, what's the way I can say climate change and air pollution and all that without actually, you know, using those exact words? And I realized that a city is a great example, because you can still certainly find beauty there. It's just the beauty is unfortunately having a negative impact on this world, and I don't think we realize it, but it's still beautiful.
Yeah, definitely. So how does YWP support you as a writer?
I mean, it's all fantastic. It means so much to me. Like, I found Young Writers Project and I started writing on here, and everyone was so supportive, and it was so nice to share my words with other people who, like, to the rest of the world, I felt like the words I said didn't make any sense. And then I found Young Writers Project, and it felt like people understood me, and like people really cared and knew what I was talking about. And so it was just like, I don't know, it was a revelation, if that makes sense, to find this place.
Oh, I love to hear about that. That's so sweet. How do you want to continue writing in the future?
I think I'll always continue to write poetry, no matter what. Even if it's not my life dream to become a world famous poet, I'd still like to continue writing it because it's a way to get all my words out. I'm hoping to maybe become a journalist for, like, start my own magazine. There are so many stories out there of just normal everyday people that you see, and they might have the craziest stories, but you won't know until you ask them. So I'd like to start something that could share the stories of everyone all over the world.
Yeah, well, congratulations on being published in Writer BP's Anthology 12.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining me on this short little interview.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That was Siri with her poem In the Afterlife. Here is Lauren, who I spoke to about her photography. Lauren's photos are found on pages 18, 21, 42, 48, and the back cover of Anthology 12.
Hi, my name is Lauren, and I'm Lauren M. on the Young Writers Project.
So what do you try to say with your photography? Like, what kind of messages are you trying to communicate?
It really depends on the photo. I think each one has a different, message. I don't know, sometimes they don't have messages and they're just pretty, which I think is fine. We had an assignment for a photography class a few months ago. We had to pick a word, and our photo had to, symbolize the word, which is very difficult, because we had to have our classmates guess what word the photo goes to, which was atrocious. And so it really depends on who's looking at it, because I see things in most of my photos, and then I'll ask somebody what they think of it, and they'll have a completely different take. So I don't really think a whole lot about the meaning, because I know it's not going to come across the way that I think it will to each person. So I like the mystery of everyone sees it different.
I feel like that's so true about my poetry. I'm going to have a much different interpretation than someone else based on just like our experiences and like what I was thinking and my personal kind of connections that someone else will definitely not pick up on. And I think it's cool to kind of have an intention for what your creative work should mean or like represent, but it's also nice to just leave it open to interpretation. It's cool to see what other people think of my poetry, my writing, and just like what meanings they take away that I wouldn't have ever guessed at. And I'm the one who wrote it. So I think it's kind of cool to see that and have like different perspectives on it.
Yeah, like what you were saying about doing, like if you're writing something or taking a photo of something that has like a really personal meaning to you, and like no one's ever going to guess it because it's almost something you would know. I think that's the best thing to get, or the best part to get someone's reaction to, is to something that's so personal that they wouldn't even have a basis to understand. And I think it's funny to see where they're seeing in it.
Exactly. And I put in so many tiny little details into my poetry that they're so subtle that it's really just there for me. And I find a lot of like happiness in that, and just putting in these tiny little like Easter eggs that only I would pick up on. It's like, oh, let's just see this, my own personal little, I don't know, those activity books where you can like circle the objects that like fit together or something, like, yeah. What are the objects that are different in this photo than in this photo? It's kind of like that for my poetry somehow.
I get that. I was taking a picture like through water drops, and it was in my kitchen. And so I was like placing things so that you would see like this chair in my kitchen in the water drops. And like no one would ever know that it's my kitchen chair, but that it's my kitchen chair. And so I know it. But everyone else is like, oh yeah, water drops.
Yeah, I love that. How do you learn more about photography? Like what kind of sources have taught you what you know?
Oh gosh, all over the place. Google is a great place to be. So is YouTube. There are so many good resources on YouTube for learning about, basic camera mechanics, because that's the hardest place to start if you don't know anything about what you're actually doing, because then you'll be sad and that's not good. When I was little, I did like all the BCA camps. I lived there. Those were great. And I did all their photography camps. And so I had like a basic understanding about, you know, shutter speed and aperture and stuff like that, but I didn't know what it actually was doing, which is, you know, is a pretty good base or place to start, because each camp is like a week, and so if you go twice you get the same lesson, which is actually very, very fun because you get to grow on in yourself. But so I remember having that first little bit of information was super helpful, because then when I stole my brother's camera, I had like a little bit of information that I could use, and then the more I ran into problems, I could grow on what I needed to know at the time, which I think is the best way to do it, because you don't need to know everything at first. So I like just like doing simple things and going, I wish it was like this, how do I make it like this, and then learning how to do that, and then you can add and add.
Yeah, I used to go to Burlington City Arts BCA all the time for the YWP open mics, which are in person. It's cool how like you can learn from these other people in camps or at open mics or at other kind of events, even if they aren't specifically like lesson based. So how does art, photography, writing, any kind of creative work connect you to other people?
Oh, I'm not, okay, this is fun. I don't like love talking to people. It's not my favorite thing in the world, but I think it gives you like a thing to talk about when you first meet someone and they go, oh, what are you interested in? What do you do in your free time? It gives you something to talk about. And I like that. But then it also, you get to connect with people who think like you do and have similar interests as you do, which is always fun, especially on the Young Writers Project, but even like at school, if you hear some other kid is taking pictures and you're like, oh my gosh, we can bond over this, which is very, I think that's kind of funny. Whenever I find like, cause I have a photography Instagram. And so whenever someone follows it, I'm from my school, I'm like, oh my gosh, someone has found me. But then you can have a conversation and it's very nice.
They found me. That's so funny too. But yeah, I agree that like just finding people with common interests is so fun, and like it's definitely a great way to start a friendship. You know, you always have this common ground if you're into something creative and someone else is into something creative. So how have you / your work changed since we talked last year for Anthology 11?
I guess, I don't know. I think I didn't do like a lot of photography during the year because I had schoolwork. But then when I actually do photography, it's like, I think it's better because I, you know, I have to think about it more because I don't have a million hours to do whatever I want because we're not in, you know, quarantine anymore. So it's nice to be able to like think more about it than I did initially, which is what was happening last year. I was just, you know, really, really bored and doing anything. But now I like found this thing that I really like to do. And so it can be a little more than just, you know, something I do when I have nothing else to do.
Yeah, like a real true passion that you just discovered. What advice would you give to artists and photographers and creative people?
I think just you just have to do it. I know it's like it's hard to find ideas and you have creativity block or whatever. You have to stop making excuses and do it. And that's the hardest part. But I think if you pick up your camera or your paintbrush or your pen or whatever, and just start like with one line or with one like really, really bad picture, it can only get better from there. You start at rock bottom with, you know, something worthy of only the garbage. You can get better and better. You can't really go down. So I would say just pick up your equipment or whatever you're doing and just try it, and then you can build off of it.
Yeah. I read, I think it was Ray Bradbury maybe, but he said something about how like if you write a story every week, you're going to have 52 stories by the end of a year. And out of those 52, you've got to have something good. There's going to be something that you like, that you want to keep, that you want to keep working on. And I feel like it's definitely the same for all creative stuff, for like art and photography. If you take something every week, then by the end of a year or a couple of months, you're going to have something good.
Yeah, I remember like you can't just take one photo and be sad that it's bad. I swear, out of every 100 photos I take, one is good. And that's good, pretty good rate for me. Over 1,000 photos in April alone. And out of those, I have no idea how many photos I was happy with from April, but definitely not 1,000. So I just, you know, you have to keep doing it because you will get better.
Exactly. I mean, obviously I didn't write 1,000 poems a month, but I wrote a lot, and a lot of them I did not like. And eventually I had to just be like, you know, I like this. This is a good one. And it's fine if nothing else is good because I like this. And I think it's difficult to feel like you're kind of settling for something when you want it to be perfect. But a lot of what I do, at least, is just being like, I know I don't like this. I'm going to leave it and I'll come back to it. And eventually it'll be good.
I heard this guy talk about, he was responding to someone asking what you do when you have creative block. And he said, you have to put down your camera and let yourself get bored. And that's when you get creative. And like, I was thinking, you know, if out of 100 poems you write, you only like the one, I think the other 99 are worth it to have gotten the one that you like.
Yeah, I think it's worth it too. Thank you so much for talking with me today about your work. And congratulations on being featured in YWP's Anthology 12.
Thank you.
That was Lauren, who talked with me about her photography. Here's Charlotte with her essay November Existence, found on page 59 of Anthology 12.
Hi, I'm Charlotte. My username on YWP is Charvermont, and this is my piece, November Existence. It's November, and music and words have long become a refuge for me. They always held open arms for me, but now more so than ever. Every minute without music feels like I'm being strangled. My violin has sprouted both a piano and a guitar. If I don't write, I explode. I need to describe in great detail the afternoon sun and so many other things, or the world will crash and burn. I have read so many books this year, but it's difficult to tell if I have learned much from them. In summer, the floating emptiness of having no place to be that surrounded me forced me to apply for one too many fall programs. Now my schedule is messy, but I make desperate attempts to neaten it. I failed my license test because I didn't see the red stop sign. My mother sometimes points at one before my eyes find it and reminds me of traffic laws. She has become my best friend. I can't keep a secret from her. I tell her about my crush on the gelato man. She agrees that he's dreamy, but more importantly, his gelato is too, even in November. There are some people I miss beyond feeling. I just want to sit in person and talk with them. I did, a bit, but then family members became sick, and social media is too draining to know how my friends are now. Some days I forget to go outside and I fall asleep feeling unfulfilled and wronged. My dreams have become vivid and lucid, but never to the point where I can make my own decisions. I don't see many people other than my family or when I'm working. I make to-do lists to occupy myself with. Oftentimes, I think that I didn't live long enough when everything was normal to truly remember how life can feel. But exercise drowns out my worries. At night, I bike around with my father and I run during the day. I run in the cold November air. It makes me sneeze and my throat winds up dry. Nobody trusts me after a November run. I cook to bring salvation to my soul. Butternut squash and lentil stew, mushroom and chickpea bake, sourdough bread, lemon and balsamic vinegar glazed Brussels sprouts, bowl of oatmeal after bowl of oatmeal after glorious bowl of oatmeal. Maple apple cake. I can't stop. It's therapy to mix ingredients together and then taste something absolutely amazing. Sometimes I feel down. Like Katerina from Margarita Liberace's Three Summers, the rain easily breaks my heart if I'm inside the house, but it is my greatest joy when I'm outside. I read about trees. I read poems by Elizabeth Bishop and books on being a better person. I read about Charles Darwin's theory of human origin. I read Harry Potter, go through a slight phase, then I read some George Orwell. I read Jane Austen's letters and encroach on her privacy. I read about the fossils that will be left when we are long gone from this planet. I fear for the years of my life I'm losing. I miss so many things, so many people. But late at night, I pile my blankets on top of me and read even more and write everything down inside journal number 5, which somehow I've managed to make my way to over these past few years. I feel content in a mountain of cotton and feathers and old stuffed animals. I sleep deeply and peacefully in November.
Ooh, thank you so much. What was your inspiration for this?
Well, I don't know how, like, if you could tell, I feel like it's pretty obvious, but it's about the pandemic and just like being alone and not really seeing people. And especially, like, I wrote that in November and everything shut down in March of that year. So it'd been like a while of just like being alone. And then I think in November, especially of 2020, at least here in Vermont, like that's when things were the worst. Like, and started to get the worst, like around the holiday season. So it was like, you really couldn't see anyone. And yeah, so it was just about how I was feeling.
I love how it covers so many different parts of your life, like little segments of diary entries. Yeah. How did you come to write this as an essay instead of a poem?
I think I actually might have started writing it in my diary at first. So there wasn't really any form to it, you know, just like prose. And I was just sort of going and going. And I was like, I feel like this would be really good if I like neatened it up and like, you know, just thought about it a bit more. But I sort of liked the style of just like, I guess, sort of just like breathless, just going. And like, you just can't stop because there's just so many emotions. And so like line breaks don't make sense because it just keeps going.
Yeah, it's almost like a montage sort of, and like each image just blurs into the next.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are so many lines in here that I love. Like, every minute without music feels like I'm being strangled. If I don't write, I explode. How did music and writing help you get through difficult times?
They're both forms of art, and I've played the violin almost my whole life, so music has always been a big part of me, but mostly like just listening and just soaking in music is, I mean, it's kind of therapy in a way. Sometimes it really speaks to you and it makes you feel better. And then writing is like getting everything out of you. Like, music is sort of, I don't think it really gets everything out of you, but it helps you sort of get through what you're feeling. And then writing, you just pour everything out and sort of empty yourself. And so there's a difference between those two things, but they both help a lot when you're feeling down and like lonely and stuff.
I agree. I listen to a lot of music. I definitely go to music and writing, like when I'm upset or when I just have something that I need to work through. I love the section in this piece about the gelato man and how close the narrator, possibly you, possibly not, are to this mother, and like this really close bond between them.
Yeah, well, the narrator is me, and it is my relationship with my mom and also my crush on the gelato man. I've always had a pretty open relationship with my mom, and like when I'm sad, I just like flop on her bed and then we just talk, you know, and that was happening more frequently during the pandemic, and especially last fall. And so we just became a lot more close, especially because I couldn't go see my friends. So she was like my one outlet.
Another line that actually really hit me, I was like, wow, this is intense, is oftentimes I think that I didn't live long enough when everything was normal to truly remember how life can feel. I think that's so true because I have kind of gotten to the point where like I don't remember what it's like before all this craziness and like,
yeah,
not just the pandemic, but before I was a teenager and before I was worried about college and grades and GPAs and all these other things. So It's really interesting how that line can be pandemic specific, but also just like after any kind of big life experience, it's hard to remember life before it.
Yeah, definitely. Another reason why it feels like that is like during the pandemic, like I got my license, you know, college became a thing that now I have to think about, and like all of these other things. And before, it just wasn't part of my life. And now it is, but it came with the pandemic, which is such a strange experience. And so it really makes my life now so different from when I was like 15, you know, before everything started. And I don't know, it's strange.
It's weird to see how much I changed. Another line that kind of goes along with the one we were talking about before is, I fear for the years of my life I am losing. I feel like I definitely feel that. Like, everyone talks about how your teenager years are like the peak of your existence. This is like the best time to be alive. 16 to 18, pretty much my peak years were in the pandemic. So I missed out on like a lot of traditional things. And I feel like I definitely can be sad about it. It's kind of bittersweet that like I didn't have the teenager years that I kind of dreamed about and that I was told I was going to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's totally what I was thinking when I wrote this, especially because like every single movie or TV show about teenagers like hypes it up to be like this amazing thing, like you're going on adventures with your friends, you're like partying at night, and it's like, no, like none of that is happening during the pandemic. And yeah, like I'm about to turn 17 and it's like, I feel like I've missed out on so much. But at the same time, I know that I'm not the only one who that's happening to. So it's making me feel a little bit better about it.
So you're ending. I love how this is kind of a nice little conclusion to this whole piece that's going to so many different places, and it all comes back to being in November and just the days that just blur into each other, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like you don't feel each individual day, you just feel like time passing.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly how I was feeling when I wrote this. This piece is sort of about like
everything kind of falling apart and stuff. But at the end, it's like a reminder, like, I'm okay. Like, everything's okay. You know, like, I've got a home. I've got a wonderful family. I've got a very comfortable bed. And so at the end of every day, I mean, like, even if I had a horrible day, I would just feel like at peace once I got into bed.
Yeah. So what inspires you to write?
Everything, I want to say. I mean, I know that sounds a little bit cheesy, but the blueberries that we pick when we go berry picking, or like literally right now I'm looking out my window and it is such a blue sky, and then there's all the green trees below it, and like that just always, I don't know, it makes me like wistful, and then I'm all like in my writing mood and whatever. Or like maybe I see like a couple and they are just like so cool, and I'm like, they're kind of inspiring. I don't know, things like that, like anything that I see, I'm just sort of like wowed by it and I want to write about it. But I think also one constant thing that inspires me to write is my mom, again, because she's a writer. I just think she's so cool, like she never stops and she's really good at it, and like she's just so inspiring, you know. She like wins awards and stuff for her writing, and it's just like inspiring because it's like, that's my mom.
I think it's so great to have someone that you can look up to like that and really have this basis that like, I see someone doing writing in a cool way, I want to do it like that too. And like being supported by that kind of person too. I think it's really great. So one last question. What do you want to do with your writing in the future?
Okay. In like the next couple months, future wise, I want to submit it to some competitions because I didn't really do that at all in the past, and now I'm like, oh my god, like I should probably do this soon because like college and whatever. But in the future, I mean, like college wise, I would love to, well, I have so many interests, but like majoring or minoring in English, like writing, that would be a dream. And then being able to combine that with something else like science or just like culture and society, you know, like things that I see every day in the world, that would make me really happy.
That's so cool that you want to continue writing and English studying. Congratulations again on being published in YWP's Anthology 12. And thank you for joining me today to talk about your piece.
Yeah, of course. It was so much fun. It's my pleasure.
That was Charlotte with her essay November Existence. Lastly, here's Vivian, who spoke with me about her art. Vivian's work is featured on pages 9, 27, 41, 43, 48, and 55 of your copy of Anthology 12.
My name is Vivian. My username on Young Artist Project is IceBlink.
So, where do you get inspiration for your art? Who inspires you? What kind of places?
Most of my inspiration comes from our country in general, or politics, especially just my life experiences as well. I use that to kind of reflect into my artwork. I guess I try to hint at ideas that I kind of believe in and try to get that across to others and just try to spread the idea of being open-minded, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what is it like telling stories with visual art instead of through writing?
I think the big difference for me is you're able to use these objects or these visual elements to reflect hidden meanings within the painting or the drawing. Visual art, I think you're leaving the person that is looking at it to guess at what you're trying to say. And I've always found that very interesting.
I think that's so true with a lot of visual art. So what are some of your favorite mediums to work with?
My most broad medium was graphite pencil. I've always loved it, and that's definitely what I started with. But recently I've been getting into painting, and I do acrylic paintings, and I've been loving that. It's starting to become my go-to medium now. I also do digital art. It's a lot different than physical, you know, laying down it on paper or canvas. I really love the tools. I think those would be my top three, but I also love photography. I kind of dabble in everything.
I think digital art is really cool because there's so many possibilities, and I feel like a lot more tools that you can use than with physical art.
Yeah.
So how do you get through challenges that pop up during your art process?
I'd say the main thing is just forgetting that it needs to be perfect, because I am very much so a perfectionist. So I think the main thing in getting through like artist block or having no ideas is just, instead of trying to make this good piece of art, I'm instead just using the emotions or what I see in the world and reflecting that onto paper and not trying to make it good or anything.
I think that's good advice. I am definitely a perfectionist too, like with my writing and with everything else. Like the difference between a 99 and 100 on a test very much bothers me.
Oh yes.
And I feel like I can definitely be that way with my writing sometimes. You do writing too. What's it like kind of doing that? And do you feel like your writing and your art have the same themes?
I think it does relate. Often I think I sort of write from an image in my mind, so it can be sort of the same. I'm kind of, I don't know, I like how you can twist it and still leave the reader guessing. But I think I often start with an image in my head and sort of explain that through it. So they're definitely connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How does art or photography or writing, any kind of creative work, connect you to other people?
Well, on Young Artist Project, for sure. I love just having the inspiration of others and just learning. I can see what I do in other people too. And it's just so cool to see what other people's takes on some of the same stuff I try to portray. And I think that's so interesting that to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how does creating visual art affect the way that you see the world?
Oh, that's a difficult one. Because of how I try to see into issues that I'm trying to put onto a canvas, I end up seeing the world differently, I think, because I'm more open-minded to what I'm trying to portray.
What are some of your favorite pieces that you've ever created?
I think one of my recent favorites would be the acrylic painting I posted on Young Artist Project. I was trying to kind of portray that the Black Lives Matter through it. It was one of my first acrylic paintings, and I was not expecting it to turn out good. That's definitely one of my favorite pieces.
I love how there's like a deeper meaning behind it. And you could think that this is just like a really cool piece, a really cool painting, but like there's a real social kind of issue that you're addressing with it.
Thank you.
So since I know that we met each other once at a piano recital, how does music affect your art?
I think it's all connected. I also play tenor sax, but I think kind of connect the flow of music to art and try to create rhythm in art because of my experience with music. So I think it's really helped me over the years, and having that extra part of me that helps. It all is interconnected and it all supports the other.
Yeah, definitely. Like everything is kind of affected and balanced by it. I think that it's cool how music kind of subconsciously affects my writing. Like the only way that I can describe an untuned piano is that it sounds the way that pennies smell. And apparently that's a weird thing, but I feel like it's such a true description. Like very metallic-y, kind of uncomfortable.
That is so cool that you connect that.
So how do you want to keep creating art in the future?
I definitely want to develop more in certain areas. So I think painting will be my main focus, but I also want to delve into digital art just because it's such an expansive way to find out what you can do with the variety of tools. One of my main life goals is to do something with my art, like activism or photojournalism. And I've always just dreamed of using that art experience to help the world in a better way, I guess.
I think that's so great. I want to ask about the work that you've done with snowflakes during the winter, because I saw a bunch of your pictures that you posted in YWP.
It was a lot of learning for me to have that limited time range. A lot of it was just taking a chance and snapping pictures and seeing what turned out. And it really affected how my photography was in general, to just take that chance. And instead of trying to pose it perfectly and wait, just take it.
I love pictures of snowflakes. There's something so cool about feeling like this is the tiniest thing, but like I can see it. It's a weird perspective thing. There's this artist from Vermont, and he was like the first person to take pictures of snowflakes or something.
Yeah.
Snowflake Bentley, right?
Oh, Snowflake Bentley. Yeah.
His work just was so cool to me. Like the level of like patience for that, where it, like go outside in the middle of winter when it's like 50 below zero and just like put snowflakes on a plate and then take them inside as fast as he could and like take pictures of them. I just love that. It's such a cool thing to me that like someone would want to like create something that requires such a like trying process where like it's not gonna come out great and like they know that it's not gonna be easy, but they still do anyway. Like that determination is very inspiring to me. Well, thank you so much for talking with me today, and congratulations again on having your art in YWP's Anthology 12.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a very joyous time to talk to you.
That was Vivian talking with me about her art. This brings us to the end of this very special Anthology 12 edition of Line Break. Thank you again to everyone who went with me to talk about their writing, art, and photography. And thank you to the George W. Mergens Foundation, who made the publication of Anthology 12 possible. Congratulations to everyone who's published in Anthology 12. Thank you so much for listening.